Hey, welcome back to the Edge and Flow podcast. This is Lucas Burnley. I am sitting here with my co-host TJ Schwartz. We are coming off of a few week hiatus. We're going to do some shop updates and kind of hit our normal stride of life, work, industry, technology, and yeah, some other stuff. How's it going, TJ?
Oh, going really good. I went to bed last night excited for this morning, dude. This is good.
Same,
Yeah.
man. Yeah, there's a lot going on as per usual, but the cup keeps getting more full,
The cup is defying physics a little bit, but
right?
I'm gonna deal with it.
Where should we start, man? Labor Day? We just got through Labor Day.
What'd you guys do for Labor Day weekend?
We went out to the coast. It turned out to be awesome, man. I feel like with kids, you're always looking for kind of this balance of what the activity is. And for me, the balance is something that is engaging for them and also kind of engaging for Maddie and I. We decided basically just to load up and go out to Pacific City and stay in this little RV park right by the beach. I've been there by myself. I've taken the boys out there to surf, but I'd never taken the whole family. Dude, it was perfect. So the setup was basically like we have our pop-up camper, okay? But we're taking a bunch of gear with us. I rented, this was like kind of a last second plan. They were out of like normal camp spots, but they had like a little, it's basically like a little hunter's cabin. It's got two bunk beds, like a pull-out sofa, a microwave, and a fridge. So that was the only thing I could get. We rented that, and it turned out to be a really nice flow because we were able to basically unpack the camper, store gear, the boys could sleep in the cabin, and then we could like take the truck out during the day if we wanted to do stuff. But system-wise, you have the ocean right across like the road, right? You have a pizza parlor, a coffee shop nearby. The campground has a pool, a playground, and it's gated. So the kids can like kind of take off, rip around, go to the playground, ride bikes, and have some autonomy. And like we hang out at the fire at night.
I like that.
It was great, man. It wouldn't be like my go. I'd be like, oh, we're gonna go camping. It's not camping. It's not running an Airbnb, but it was like this perfect kind of middle ground where you're like, oh, we are making s'mores at night. You guys are staying up late and feeling like you are like capable autonomous humans. We're getting to, I surfed with Bo a bunch. Like,
Nice.
it was perfect.
That's great.
Tail end of summer. That was our last trip. So I'm psyched.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah. What about you guys?
Well, Labor Day weekend's always a big one. My wife, her both of her parents' birthday pretty much always falls on Labor Day week or weekend,
Oh
because
man.
her per parents' birthdays are like 2 days apart. And my wife's birthday is tomorrow, so they're all within a week. And so it's kind of like a birthday bash every Labor Day weekend because her parents are both teachers, so it's their last
Oh
weekend.
yeah, that's
So it's like a
big.
big, it's like probably the biggest summer weekend of the year for them.
Yeah.
And so we went up to the cabin that's on her side of the family and just hung out, caught frogs. I had a really nice time with my brother-in-law. We went fishing in this little stream
Oh,
for
nice.
brook trout, just him and I for a while, and crazy amount of beaver dams. Like I've never seen,
Oh.
like every 50 yards there was a full-blown beaver dam. And so you could just walk, and that little brook trout just love beaver dams, obviously. And so we just yank brook trout, catch and
Just fish
release
hunting.
for like 4 or 5 hours, just walking down this
Nice.
stream. Very nice time, like really, really good.
Yeah, that sounds perfect. How many people? Like, what, this is like a big family deal?
Yeah, decent size. I mean, seven or so adults, and our two
Okay,
kids,
yeah.
and yeah.
No other
And
kids, no other kids like your age kids?
not yet. We have a
No.
family member expecting, but we're the
Oh
first.
man, you're the first. It's pretty fun. We don't have like a lot of cousins, so It'll be really interesting to see. Like, the boys have one cousin that is like right between their ages, and they get so psyched to spend time with her.
Nice.
Now, like, some of Maddie's cousins are starting to like have babies. There's going to be like a minimum of like a 4 year age gap, but the family is so tight. Like, hopefully that'll be, it's like cousin once removed, but still a cousin. Make
Same,
do.
same. That'll be cool.
Sweet, man. I have the feeling that you've been very productive and my shop existence has been chaos. Does this track
We had
for
a little bit of
you?
chaos on our side. We did have some step backs and then some step forward. A lot of stuff happened actually in the shop.
Where do you want to start with that? Do we start with this? I'm like tempted to hear about the good things and let you cap it with chaos. What do you
I
think?
think I
Do you
gotta
want to start with the
start with the
chaos?
chaos. I think I have
Okay,
to. It
let's
kind of
go.
culminates. Well, I'm trying to remember last time I recorded. Had I gotten the Sile running the Richlite with a coolant system?
No, that was actually probably the last time you and I were talking, and we were
Yeah.
just you were texting me photos of it.
Yeah.
So, just to like recap that, like as TJ's been going through this process, he's been look, we've been having a bunch of conversations about like, do you wet mill composites? Do you dry mill composites? And like,
Yeah.
what is the like process of cleaning and maintaining that?
Yeah.
You figured out a pretty good system for wet milling.
Well, and that's what I'm gonna get
Maybe.
into. So we set up a coolant filtration paper band system on the Sile. And I
Okay.
think I was talking about that last time we recorded, but we got it up and running. It works really good. Like as a system, it needs a couple tweaks, but it's like really effective at what it is designed to do. Super happy. We did start running the first batch of scales. The LT5 is the main issue here, moving it from the Tormach over to the Sile, which is they're all Richlite. And so we throw the fixture. We have Pearsons on both, so I just threw the fixture in the Sile, posted the program for the Syntec controller, and then moved tools over, and then just pretty quickly I could just jump it over. Ran it under coolant, cranked the feeds and speeds because I get, there's way more power rigidity and speed in that machine. And also it's got coolant on it. So that was great. The speed, it basically cut the cycle time in half, which is
Wow.
substantial because those scales they're the single longest machine time of any part we make. Because they're just huge scales that have
Right,
a
tons
lot
of
of 3D
material.
surfacing. So we had to get it on a faster machine. It ran great. We made like 30 sets of scales. Everything was looking good. And then we do a weekly drop of LT5s, and we got into assembly of those LT5s, and we caught something, and that is we had comped for a work offset anomaly on the Tormach that I still do not comprehend. I do not understand it, but I put a little feature on the fixture that I probe in the Tormach that gives you your X and Y zero for an offset. And so for whatever reason, I would probe that and then I would machine, and it was like everything was translated off by a few thou in X and Y. And I calibrated the probe and it was just still that way. And so my only conclusion on the Tormach was like that fixture, that like little feature must be incorrect, because if the probe is calibrated and it's reading everything translated, then it must be like the fixture has a little bit of an anomaly. And the reason I thought that is because that's the fixture that I broke all those taps off in. And so I was pulling it in and out of the machine and like really fighting it. And so I was like, well, I must have kind of fat fingered something, and that ended up being not super accurate. So I compensated for it in X and Y on the cam side to basically tell the computer what I think that fixture actually is so that it would run right on the Tormach. And then I move it to the Sile. Well, what it appears is that the Sile was what made the fixture in the first place. And it's correct in the zeros on the Sile, but it's not on the Tormach. And I didn't think that was really possible. And so I like ch was checking the scales, but not close enough. And we scrapped all 30 of those scales, had to throw them all in the trash, and basically lost. I mean, it's not that expensive of material loss, but it just
It's just
like
time.
we basically had to cancel a drop, like the day before the drop because of that. And so I still don't know how it's possible that that could be.
This is where like mastery comes into play. Remember, I had a similar problem with my fixture, and like I kind of couldn't figure out. It's like understanding enough, but not being able to like post action a problem is weird, because like mistakes are going to happen. It's a given, right? It, like you said, you could have just fat fingered a number. Like there's all these things that, like, could have you just like slightly miss. For me, the inability to actually diagnose what happened is one of the most frustrating like occurrences, right? Because you can always figure out how to fix it once you know, like, okay, there is a problem. But it's frustrating when you can't actually tell what happened.
Yeah, and to this
Like,
moment, I was posting it on my story and I said, any machinists out there, like, can you give me some insight? And I did get some feedback, but it
what's your
doesn't.
hunch, or like, what was the feedback? What do people?
Well, there are some pointers that it's like it's not advisable to modify cam to match a machine's
Totally.
quirkiness when you have multiple machines, because this is what happens, which
When
is,
you have multiple machines.
yeah.
Remember, I had an issue with modifying my cam due to something that was off on my fixture. But it made more sense to me than like modifying the program or
Yeah.
like in the machine, like the
Yeah.
offset in the machine. I don't know.
Yeah, but I still don't know, because what I thought is I was compensating for a fixture that was the wrong shape, not for a machine doing something weird. You know what I mean? So
Okay,
I
so just like as I'm hearing this, is there a chance, like you've had the Tormach for a very long time, is there a chance that the offset of your fixture on the Tormach is actually off, but all of the things that have been made on that worked because they were also off, and then you put a new fixture that had been made on the Sile onto the Tormach,
Yeah.
but that offset was off?
Well, the weird thing, all of our fixtures on the side on the Tormach are made on the Sile. And so it does that. It runs tons of Sile made fixtures, and it runs before we move the scales over. It's been running 40 hours a week for like
Super
a
weird.
year. So that's the only fixture that
It's
I don't
almost like
know.
you'd have to remake the fixture and see if the problem is
Yeah.
consistent.
It's almost like I need a CMM it or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
But
Dude,
the
this is like we're having like a real machinist.
yeah.
Like it would be an interesting thing. Like I struggle with the right and wrong way to do things. And I think like a lot of it is actually probably like ADHD, ADHD kind of thing, where I'm like sense of right and wrong is being like messed with,
Yeah.
but I don't actually have the solution for it.
Yeah. So where we're at is that fixture ended up on the Sile. All I had to do was reverse the manipulations that I did to it, and then it was dead on.
Wait,
So
oh, okay, got it.
once I like backtracked the compensation in the cam, then it was dead on, which is what you would expect. So I anyway throw 30 scales in the trash. As we're assembling sharpened knives with sheaths, like it's just there. I mean, the knives can go out the door that day, but then we scrap all the scales. So the following week, we jump on track to get the replacement scales going. And we run all the scales. I'm checking them way closer this time. I'm like, really, because our alignment to our perimeter on that knife is really tight. There's no shadow boxing, so it can't be off. So I'm checking them really tight, and we bust out another 30 sets of scales, and then we go to assemble and they don't line up.
No.
And I checked them. I was like, I checked these scales. Why are they not lining up? The holes aren't lining up. It's just not right. And I really started to think about it, they had all shrunk lengthwise. And it occurred to me that Rich Light is swelling from the
Because
coolant.
of the coolant.
And then it's after it's machined, it's dead nuts because it's wet. And so you check it and it's perfect. And then it dries for like 48 hours and it shrinks enough that that precision fit that we're going for is not possible. So the fortunate thing is because they didn't really shrink widthwise because it's not very wide handle, all the shrinkage was noticeable in the length direction. So it what that actually resulted in is in like where the finger guard is and where the like bird's beak is overhanging the tang, but everything else was pretty well lined up or basically perfectly because it just kind of squeezed together. And so I hand sanded all of those to get them fixed because they were luckily because they shrunk counterintuitively, they were like overhanging with extra material. And so I was able to hand sand all those. I just put them on like a scrap knife and just sanded them until it was flush and then went through all those. So 2 weeks in a row, we had like just botched scales. So week number three, which is this week, we're confident we cannot run coolant on Rich Light because even if you can map out like how much is it going to shrink and stuff, like it's just a fool's errand. So we decided to run it dry. But the beauty is we can vacuum out all the chips and then we use the coolant filtration system that we developed when you wash the machine down because you still need to filter that stuff out, the remnants. And so we ran them dry this week. It freaking worked and it's way better running it dry. And honestly, I think it machines better. It doesn't tear as easily. I think the drier it is, the better. It's like harder. And so it
You
machines
get a
cleaner.
cleaner. That was kind of where I ended up with my Carta. Like, you get a lot of fuzzing. I'm still really on the fence. I think that if you rebuild your dust collection port with a brush that's closer to the spindle, I think that you'll like, dude, I was amazed. We talked about this, but I put a piece of tape up in my cabinet, like rolled it over on itself, stuck it on the wall. There's no dust on it.
That's awesome.
It was picking up enough of the airborne particulate that I'm like very comfortable with it.
So we've been running a shop vac and we've been chatting. We've been really pretty close actually to buying a like real dust collector a few times. And I kept holding out because I was like, I think we might be going wet, which totally negates the need for that. And so I think we've now come around to wet is not the game. It might, there's a good chance that we will run the G10 wet
That
because
makes sense.
the G10 does not have an issue with being wet. It machines well, dry or wet, and it's got the worst dust problem of any material that we run.
Yeah, it's also the
Um,
most
in the
hazardous.
most hazardous. So it's probably likely that we go hybrid in the future where we're vacuuming Rich Light and Micarta and running G10 wet. I think that's the future.
Well, right now you're in the messy middle because even though you're gearing up machine-wise and your processes are really dialed or getting dialed, you don't have like right now fully dedicated machines where you're like, oh yeah, no, this is like a handle scale machine. But you're honestly probably at the point where that makes sense. It's just this is something making sense and something being like affordable and also manageable are two very different things, right?
It's we're kind of piecing together that roadmap right now. And the nice thing is the coolant filtration solves the problem I used to have, which is if you run a machine dry sometimes and wet sometimes, you get into these issues with cleaning it, which we discussed, which is like even if you vacuum it all up, when you spray everything down, like you're spraying, there's stuff in there still, and you don't want it going in the
You're
coolant.
rinsing
So
it into yourself.
with the coolant filtration, I'm very confident in switching back and forth without concern. One thing about the Rich Light though, dry, that makes it very unique. It's extremely low dust. It's almost everything that comes off of it is heavy. It's
It's
like
like a
big chips,
big chip.
and the dust is like basically hardly noticeable. So the thought that I had in the meantime is I'm gonna probably put an air mover. There's a window on one side of the sile.
Yeah.
I might put like a 6-inch large airflow, like 600 CFM, just air mover that's just cleaning the fines out of the actual cabinet and not at the spindle. And so because the it's like with G10, you can literally see like snow in the air.
Yeah.
And it's like you have to get that stuff before it
Yeah.
gets airborne. Whereas the Richlite, it's like there's a pile of heavy stuff, and then there's like a tiny amount in the air that you can't even see, but you can smell, which is not good. So it's like if we suck all the air out of the cabinet and replace it with fresh air like every
Yeah.
few seconds, and then you vacuum up the stuff that's sitting there heavy, I think that for Richlite is actually a healthy and good way to do it.
Yeah.
But we're gonna have to continue down that road and decide, with G10 and micarta. So it's a work in progress. But a long story short, we have the Richlite running stable finally after 2 weeks of stressful weeks because you do all the work. The scales should be the easiest part. They should be. They're absolutely not. They totally like torpedoed us for 2 weeks. And then this week we had a 3-day week because of Labor Day, and we somehow basically compressed a 4-day effort, like a normal 4-day week, into 3 days. And it was just evidence of the fact that an instability in a process, you can't underestimate like how disruptive that is. And then when
Totally.
it all works, it was easier, an easier week with one less day because it just wasn't going wrong on us. Everything was working. So really, really good week this week. Super happy.
Nice. Congrats.
Thanks.
LT5 is running smooth.
So yeah, finally, dude, those scales have, it took us a long time to get it to run stable on the Tormach. And then I thought it just moved right over to the sile. It's not the
Yeah.
case. It's been those
You don't
scales.
know what you don't know. That's the
Yeah.
thing. Like, more steps just create more opportunity for some type of issue,
Yeah.
right? Like,
Oh,
simplicity, good.
one last kind of kick in the nuts from the scales. The after we ran that successful day this week and got the scales we needed, I was looking at the tool holder that was doing the roughing. And well, I was going to replace the tool. The tool wouldn't come out, and it's a hydraulic holder. So I release the
Oh.
hydraulic pressure, tool won't come out. I look at the throat, like the perimeter around where it's holding the tool. It's got heat treat patina. And I look at the tool. The coating is rubbed off on the shank. So when I moved things over and when I was fighting all this stuff, I was making changes. And something I did in op one changed the way this op two tool was touching the part. So it was machining
Whoa.
and it wasn't cut, trying to cut with the shank, but it was on a secondary pass. It was touching
Just
the
spinning
shank
it.
and just rubbing. And when it was wet, it didn't really matter
Yeah,
that
of
much.
course, right?
And then as soon as it went to dry, it literally brazed the tool into the holder like permanently. It's just welded in there. Can't get it
Wow.
out. It's basically a heat shrink holder made out of a hydraulic holder. And so it's just like wall art now. It's like this BT30 Meritool hydraulic holder with a tool in it that
Just weld it
just
in.
welded in there.
Dude, it's endless. I mean, like, for me, like, Kihoku development has been like both the most exciting and some of like the most frustrating times for me because I'm just out of my element. And it's really exciting when something works and then just like devastating when it's something that's happening beyond my like ability of understanding or I'm like, why am I getting this tool mark? I was having this problem on my surfacing where I was getting it's a checkered handle, right? Like a kind of like, yeah, basically like a checkered handle with a ball mill. And I was getting like a track across some of my checkers. And I was like, this doesn't make any sense. And it's retraction. It's like retracting below the surface of another area, but I could not figure out how to modify it. And I spent probably 3 hours. Like once I figured it out, then spent, and I'm like just banging my head on the wall. Like, why? Like, what setting is just like checked that I'm missing?
Yeah, clearance height.
Clearance height. So.
That's one of those things people, I mean, one part, paying someone to make one part on a CNC machine,
Yeah.
there's a reason it's very expensive.
Very
And then
expensive.
there's a reason when you make 1,000, they get very cheap.
Yeah.
Is it the, yeah, that first setup, man, it sometimes it's a breeze, but
Yeah.
sometimes it just doesn't want to do it, you know?
It's just learning. Like, even where I'm at with the Kihoku now, like, it is not like I basically started a batch before PNWCI. I haven't finished those knives yet, right? It's 12 knives. I'm in the process, but none of the processes are like streamlined into my crazy workflow. We can actually let me give you an update on what I'm doing since it's kind of like parallels. So summer's been, you know, crazy busy across primarily with family stuff. And I was thinking about this yesterday. I feel super fortunate that I was able to prioritize family time and like trips and just like flexibility, but it's also super frustrating from like internal drive, like work mode. So it was kind of a survival mode scenario because basically right now business is just Maddie and I. If we're not working, work's not happening, right? There's small things that are kind of going on and things that you set up and pre-orders, you know, like, but nothing active is happening. It has gotten messier than like at almost any other time where I think I'm realizing like again how spread out I actually am and the types of jobs that I'm managing. And I'll get really hard on myself because I'm like, man, I haven't like my production in the shop is really low. And Maddie's like, yeah, but you worked today. You worked all day. Like you didn't not work. And it's an interesting like headspace. So as I'm looking at these things and I'm like kind of project managing and then I'm working in the shop a little and I'm doing those stuff. I know that we need help. I'm not ready to bring in shop help. And when I looked at where my time was being spent, I realized that a lot of it is actually on the side, not side projects, but like brand work. They're on the brand. Conversations with graphic designers. It's trying to figure out the next production run. It's trying to figure out what our next apparel drop is. It's like things that are important to me, but overall are like less important financially than what I'm producing in the shop or like knives that I can design for collaboration.
I agree with you, but also your branding ability is like your superpower. You know what I mean? So it's like
And this is
to
why it's
do what you're
difficult.
best at doing is
Yeah.
not, you know what I mean? It's, I see what
It's
you're getting at though.
really okay, but here's where like with the brand and the branding, I am not the best operator. I hate hearing people say like I'm an idea man, but there is actually personality traits and like skill sets where development of the thing might be the strength and then actually, execution of that thing over a long time period is not the strength. I fall into that. I don't consider myself like an idea man, but I also realize that a lot of times, like once a product or process is developed, I'm not the most consistent person to keep doing it. Right. So we did two things. I am bringing on Joey to basically. He is coming on kind of as like project management, but also like art direction because he's been intrinsic to the brand from like the beginning, right? Designed logos, like has designed stamps, has helped me with all the shows. Like he has intimate knowledge of our business. Okay. So we're basically just starting with him remote 10 hours a week.
Nice.
But him at 10 hours a week with spreadsheets and accountability, like me being accountable to him is very different than me trying to be accountable to myself from a standpoint of like, hey,
Yeah.
what's the next seasonal drop we're doing?
Yeah, no, that's a really good move. Yeah, I like that.
I think it's a force multiplier because I think it's almost like an accountant where I realize like, wow, this accountant at $90 an hour is so much more efficient than me stumbling through all of these issues that I actually don't know and problem solving.
Yeah.
Okay? I think that Joey, like he basically yesterday had broken down. He's like, here's the things that you said you want to do this year. Here's like a workflow to get that done. Here's the conversations that need to happen. We're getting ready to do a pretty good size apparel drop. And now I've handed it off to him. I'm not involved. And it's That's that awesome. Like end of the work where some of just like the production conversations and back and forth with the printer. So, you know, like he broke down sizes. He's like, hey, I basically crawled the website, figured out sizing based on previous orders. Like the stuff that I'm really not good at.
The details.
The details. Okay. Yeah. So
that's awesome.
That's one. What does that do? Does that help me make more product? No, it doesn't help me make anything extra in the shop, but theoretically it creates consistency in the business that I don't have to manage. Which frees up, we don't know yet, but it frees up time. Okay. Yeah. The second one is I brought someone on to help with social media.
Nice. I saw the content.
Okay. We are in a unique industry right now. Okay. You saw, I posted a shop tour. Shop tour got flagged. Post getting flagged means no non-followers can see my account. So if you don't follow me already, you can't find my account. My account, basically, what it's saying is because of this post, it's going against community safety standards and can't be recommended to non-followers. So if you look at this from like a growth standpoint, this is a big issue.
That is.
Okay. However, with help around social media, I now have the bandwidth to like experiment. And basically my take on where the knife industry at with social media is adapt or die. Okay. I don't think that we can continue to do things the way that we have done things. I think that a good portion of the industry is going to try to do exactly that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that a lot of brands are going to become okay with just their following. Like the followers that we have is our core group.
Yeah.
Can't really grow it, but we can market to them.
Yeah. That's tough.
Yeah. So this is a total test. Like I won't go into it like a ton, but it's expensive. Right. But it's consistent. And what I keep seeing is the things that are consistent are successful. Like 9 times out of 10, at least in our business, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You're showing a great example of that in product, like physically made product. You're being super consistent and you're experiencing like rapid growth, not rapid growth from the standpoint of like forcing it, but like organic growth based on the fact that you are being incredibly consistent.
I haven't always, I'm not a super consistent person. And yeah, I've rounded that corner in the last few years that like, what they always say in every poster and movie is, you know, consistency is key. It's freaking 100%.
Yep.
No so, lies.
Social media is something that I realize for me, and especially again, this goes to brand, super, super important. Okay. Long term, I feel it's important. I built my business on some variation of social media. And in that time, social media has changed. Okay. So working with this team, like basically what I'm getting is we basically film once a week. They're doing the editing. They're doing the posting to my account. I'm doing engagement. I have oversight of the videos. They come in, they're like, they have ideas of what they want to shoot. I have ideas of what I want to shoot. But what's really interesting is there's like, I actually don't know how old they are, but I'm guessing there's probably like 15, 18 year spread in age. So it's like, they're younger guys. So all of a sudden now we've got presence on TikTok. These are not things that I actively want to manage. I want the results. I want to do it. And I want to be able to present the content, but there's no way that I can use my time to figure this stuff out right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we're doing it. We're basically doing a 2-month test. I looked at this morning. I have a reel that hit 20,000 views.
Wow.
So what was interesting, and the way that they do it, again, like finding people who have a passion and a specialty is so unique, right? So I look at working with them as like the value is like, yes, there's content, but also consulting. I've always said that like the value with working for like knife companies, for working with some of us makers, is you get the product, you get the designs, but you also get the consulting.
Yeah.
Based out in passion, based in interest, and like a deep knowledge of like an industry.
Yeah.
So it's been interesting to see how they look at the analytics versus what I was looking at. It's interesting to see how they structure a video versus how I would film something. And it's really fun.
Yeah.
Like to have hands off.
Yeah.
So the question is, and we can like follow up on this in like 2 months. Can it pay for itself? And can, on the flip side, can it actually be profitable?
I'm excited because the content is really cool. They're doing a really good job. I like seeing the excitement on your feed.
Great engagement. You have enough that you're looking at like the same things. It's like you look and you're like, the comments are really good. People are excited.
Mm-hmm.
Views are really good. Like, so the question is like, to your, you know, to what your dad said, like, is it interesting? Is it important or is it just interesting? Will this prove to be an important component of the business? Because I've never been able to truly work social media to the level that I feel like it is like a productive component of the business. And this may change that.
I'm excited to see it, man. And I'm very excited that you're doing this experiment.
Yeah,
for you, but yep. Also for me, because I'm, yep.
Totally.
I'm watching. Because
that's the best, right?
Yeah,
it's the same with what you're doing. You see it in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah, I'm because I have a hard time with social media. Just like everybody, you know, if you're in business, you're trying to do something. It's hard to stop and like make some quality piece of content when you're like, you know, with all the scale issues. Really good content, you know, to show like the struggle that we're fighting with and the details. And but when your head's in it and you're trying to solve problems like that, I have a very hard time just speaking to an audience. You know, it's like not what my wiring
totally
wants me to do. So having a, like you said, an accountability of like, no, they're gonna show up. You have a machine that you just broke or something happened.
Yeah.
They're gonna point a camera at you, so like get ready.
Yeah.
I kind of would like that. It's it's uncomfortable, but at the same time, the like rawness, I think, is always a good thing if you're just trying to be transparent and authentic and all that.
Yeah.
So
also not, I think non-industry, there's pitfalls. So like right away, they're not used to having a product where there's a very good chance that a post is going to get restricted.
Mm-hmm.
But I could see that like the wheels spinning as we were talking about it, like they see it like I see it. One, it's an opportunity. Two, it's a challenge.
Yeah.
So it's really unique. So yeah. Just as like a, like for people listening, like you guys will get to see this kind of real time. So basically we shot a shop video. Okay. Just a tour of the shop.
So is there knives? Like
what we think happened is that we think the banner, it said Burnley Knife Co. We actually think the text in the banner is what got it caught, right? Essentially.
So weird.
Does that make any sense? Absolutely not. It's ridiculous. Okay. Am I making things that go against community standards? Absolutely not. But what we kind of know is that like AI is picking up things. And just like wholesale, just saying like, nope, okay, that whatever it picks up, it's like, okay, goes against community standards. I had one where I think it actually picked it up as like a vape or something weird. Okay. So first thing I did is I went through and I deleted all the videos and posts that were restricting my account. Okay. And I had some like cool stuff, like the Doppler anodized Quiken got like picked up. And these are things where I'm like, okay, like good content for me. Mm-hmm. Right. So deleted those, clear my account. The next thing that happens is the shop video gets flagged. Okay. So you go in, if anyone wants to check this, you go into your settings in Instagram and you go to account status. You scroll way down, you go to account status, and it will show you if you have a restricted post. Okay. I'll add a screenshot of this to the Patreon. Okay. Mm-hmm. From there, it'll give you two options. It'll either say this post cannot be recommended or your account cannot be recommended. Okay. The video made the account non-recommendable. What we're going to do is basically repost that video, editing out any mention of knives, any text that says knives, any knife on the wall.
Is it presenting you with opportunity to appeal?
It does. But here's the problem. Okay. So I've done this a few times now because I was having still images. Okay. You can appeal it. But what seemed to happen is that it would appeal. A human would look at it, make a judgment call. And I've had it go both ways. No, like I had an image from Raven, the pirate, that was this really cool image of the squid with like an octopus. It's like super artsy, right?
Mm-hmm.
It got flagged. I appealed it. Nothing. I appealed it. Nothing. Another one, there was an image from Donut Media, just another squid from CRKT. I appealed it. It got cleared and it hasn't gotten picked up again. But what seemed to be happening is even if it gets cleared, it can get picked up again. So you spend this time like, okay, I'm going to appeal this. And then it gets freed up for a few days. Then it goes back into Instagram jail.
So you can get tried for the same crime multiple times.
You can get tried multiple times, right? I appealed four times and it hasn't been picked up again. But if you're creating valuable content, one image that is like messing with that is a problem.
Yeah.
Okay. So what we're going to see is if this edited video basically can make it through. My argument is like my shop's no different than any other metalworking shop. Mm-hmm. There is nothing. I'm not like, we're watching like videos that on Instagram of like all kinds of knife stuff happening. We don't know why things are getting flagged. No one, yeah. I mean, if you look at threads, like people are talking about this. The industry is talking about this. Big brands like Montana Knife Co. had that one where they basically posted the carrots picked it up. Okay. So the question becomes, how do you market a brand in a space that's product driven where the product is now being restricted? So that's what I'm trying to kind of figure out.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a major problem. I've it's one of the reasons to go back to it. The mailing list, I've been trying to build it, which as we talked about earlier, puts you in a bubble.
Yep.
It's only a lifeboat. It's not like a way to survive long-term. It's just to get off a sinking ship. You know what I mean? If Instagram goes down completely for knife makers, at least you salvage something. But man, this is a bummer because
it really is.
Yeah. And we haven't been very affected, like us, me personally, and our page,
totally.
But it's like, I'm not taking that for granted. I see it coming because I just see all this random stuff like your feed. Cause it's like, if it was not that I disagree with him making this kind of knife, but if it's like a hyper tactical sort of brand,
sure,
you would think that would be the first low hanging fruit to start to get this issue.
Like, defined as weapon.
Yeah. Whereas your page, it's like, you look at that page and tell me that it is inspiring harm or it's somehow aggressive or like, there's none of that.
It's just not there.
Yeah.
Now, Burnley brand, to the best of my knowledge, has never gotten flagged. This is on my personal page. On Burnley brand, we have images of like SQDs. We have some knife picks. We're very careful. We've been very careful to not like make it knifey. And I get like some people are going to hear this and they're probably going to rail against it and be like, no, I want to show content the way that I want to show it. This is censorship. This is ridiculous. To quote Ben, though, it's rented land. Like we're on rent, we're on someone else's land. They get to make the rules of this. So you either figure out how to operate within it or you leave it. I don't want to leave it. And I actually, it's weird. This is like a weird thing to say, like broad stroke. Like I get it. Like they're not night. Their business is not understanding subgenres. You know, like I can't expect them to really care what the difference between a kitchen knife is and a pocket knife or a sword or a piece of art. Like it's just not, it's unrealistic to think that it's going to happen.
And that's why I like YouTube's approach, at least thus far, is that they're like edged weapons or edged
Totally.
tools, just totally fair game. Because it's like, it'd be nice if you could sit down with someone who can make a decision at in that company and say, look, things with sharp edges are so ambiguous that if you try to draw lines inside of that, they either all need to go or they all need to stay. Like,
And that's actually where I'm scared in a way that if people push too hard, they're just like, you know what? There's no value in this. You guys are like this, you know, infinitesimal, you know, portion of our viewership. And like, we're just not going to have edge. Like anything with an edge is going away would be completely ridiculous. But like at a
Very
point,
possible.
it might be poking the bear. I don't know.
I mean, TikTok's already that way, isn't it?
So yes. And the content that we posted on Instagram, we also posted to TikTok. It has not been flagged on TikTok. This doesn't make sense. So we are you are dealing with like a gaslighting, like non-definable issue. You're like, you posted carrots, it's getting blocked. And then you'll watch and there's like, you know, some street fighting like breakdown and they'll have a knife video and you're like, it's not restricted. You know, something where like someone's actually being harmed and you're like, what is going on?
There's some
A
crazy
kitchen knife
stuff
gets
on Instagram.
blocked. Right. Like, and I think we've talked about this a little bit. I think the push for like some of the major brands to do kitchen knives was the thought that kitchen knives won't get restricted. I think I have a suspicion that it might be the focus of the image or video. I could be totally wrong. Time's going to tell, but I think a video where food is being cut is a di is different than where the focus is on the knife as a physic, like as the primary product.
Oh, I believe that. That
Right?
100%. Because, there's a lot of other products that like may have a knife in its sort of
In it.
ecosystem. Like if you're going to try to sell a cutting board that you made because you're a woodworker, I'm probably going to put a knife in. That's a good point. Having more of a the knife is a participant in the image. Yeah, that's a good
And
thought.
here's the reality. It's what you said earlier, which is this is super frustrating. So, you know, as a maker, like operating on social media, a lot of times we're snapping a picture of a finished product and we're posting it. Or we're taking like a little process video of something we're working on. Having to strategize your way out of that is like really frustrating. It's just like it's an added step that I think I will be curious to see. I think a lot of makers are kind of like almost tapping out on social media
Yeah, I can feel
where,
myself doing it.
right, you're kind of like, I have enough of a following. I have the mailing list. I'm a huge fan of mailing lists. Okay. I don't even see it as like a backup. I just see it as if you can grow a strong mailing list, like you're growing a strong element of your business. Right.
Not rented land.
It's not as close. I mean, it still is, right? Like you're paying for like a mail, you know, server or what a news list kind of, you know, if you're not just maintaining it yourself on Gmail or something.
Well, I backed mine up. I have MailChimp and they like keep track of all of it,
And then you
subscribes
back it
and
up.
unsubscribes, but I back it up on like a spreadsheet just for who
See, we
knows.
don't, that's smart. That's smart. So you maintain ownership.
Just in case, because the value, you can't understate the value of a list of emails of people that really care about what you're doing. It's irreplaceable, really.
Well, and this is the argument can be made, like when you really look at it, you're like, how much? Okay, so a small business, if you can sell everything that you make, how much is this actually valuable? And like, how much resource, time resources or financial resources is it worth? Right now, for some reason, I'm really drawn to it, and I have to trust my gut that it's important. Like, more important now for some reason, I don't know. So we're gonna see.
Yeah, no, I'm excited to hear the experiment next week. We'll have to touch base and
So
see.
basically what will happen is we shot a video explaining the problem. Okay. And I think the video, I actually think this video that we shot will have really good traction. Then we'll repost the knife shop video with all mention of knives. And I want to see like one. So that video was at 10,000 views when it got restricted. I want to see if it goes past that. It's dude, it's interesting. Anything else? As soon as you get a little bit of like a knowledge base, the topic becomes more interesting.
Yeah, that's a fact.
Speaking of, can we talk about your side quest a
We can
little?
talk about
Yes.
So excited. So I got the drone parts all in. Practice on the simulator a bunch since we last talked, because the last time we chatted on this on a pod on pod episode was I was saying I was going to do it, and then I was like, I can't back out of this one. I'm doing it. So I got all the stuff ordered. It all came in. I did a bunch of simulating, and then on Labor Day, had the day off work. I sat down and I built the thing. Got her, configured. You have to plug a USB cord into it, kind of get everything set up right. Took it out in the yard, and I was like, well, I've simulated a little bit, but I don't know how this is going to go. And I just set it in the yard, and I'm looking at my wife. I'm like, I don't know. I like didn't want to fly it because I just soldered. There was 20 different connections to circuit boards that I had to solder.
Oh, that's pretty active.
Yeah. Oh
Like
yeah.
active building.
Yeah. Like it's fully soldered together, all the connections and stuff. And then the configuration is all like pretty manual to get it to fly, as far as the
Wow.
software. And so I didn't think it was going to work. And I was like, well, I guess there's only one way to find out. So I just pop it up and I flew a huge loop around the field near our house and came back, landed it, no problem. Couldn't believe it. Couldn't believe it worked. And it was like, I was probably 160 beats a minute on my heart rate. It was crazy exhilarating, like a roller coaster experience, but just unbounded. It's And so I've been flying quite a bit, and it is unbelievable. The only one crash I've had is on the second flight. In that configuration, it's a very laborious process to get it set up. One of the things you have to set up is you need a feed of the voltage of your battery into your goggles, which is
Oh, wow.
something I had to like really dig deep to get to figure out how to get that to work. But I didn't have it working out the gate. And in my mind, I'm just thinking, well, when I feel the battery like fading a little bit, I'll just come land, because that's the way some other remote control airplanes I've had are that are cheap. And this thing draws so much power so fast that it was like it just lost power. I mean,
On off.
it just gone and just landed it in on the neighbor's deck. And he comes out, super nice guy. I really like him. He thought the thing was awesome. He's like, really? And I was explaining it to him. He thought it was cool, luckily. But the battery was fried because they produce so many
Oh.
amps that if you go to the minimum voltage, it just burns them. It literally like blew up like a little balloon. And I had to
Wow.
like leave it out in the gravel driveway, because if it I mean,
Explodes.
it can burst into flames very easily. And so I ordered more batteries. I got the voltage readout going, and I've flown many times since. And as long as I do land at the correct voltage, I don't have an issue at all.
It's amazing that there's not like a fail safe in there.
So there, you have to configure that. It's all
You.
manual. So yeah.
Oh yeah, it sounds like a nightmare to me right
It
now.
honestly, it's pretty fun because you have like control. Because if you imagine in the goggles, you have like a heads up display. So it's like what you want in that frame, you manually click and drag like onto the simulated frame on the computer, and you tell it where it is. You tell it, do you want how much time you've been flying? Do you want how much battery you
So
have? Do you
cool.
want everything? You can cover the whole screen with like just numbers and variables, and like you can set up all the buttons on the remote. You can set up to all do different things, totally preferential to what, nothing is like default. It's all like, I set it up the way that this YouTuber was recommending, but it's all just like open software, open source. It's just whatever you want.
Low key, I think one of the most interesting skill sets that you can develop right now, like it's unmanned flight. Like you are controlling a piece of equipment in the sky. And again, like it's, I think drones are like anything else where public can like idea of them is very different than like enthusiast idea of them.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. You're like, oh, drones, like my buddy's kids got a drone, like cool. Or, you know, like a little DJI, like I've played with some drones. But what you're doing, like first person viewing, like this is what movies are made out of, man. If there's like an intergalactic war, you know, you might get called up.
My wife and I are sitting watching a shoe commercial.
Yeah.
And they obviously had shots from an FPV drone.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's FPV. And I was like, I never noticed that before. But I'm like, if you watch commercials, especially like outdoor athletic cars and stuff, FPV drones are all over the place.
You're there racing. I mean, yeah, motorcycle racing, car racing. I mean,
yeah.
I remember like very early, like I knew a guy who started shooting real estate videos. And like, this was like early.
Mm-hmm.
He was making like killer money. Probably very competitive now, but that was early adopter, high level nerdism, like had the thing figured out how to monetize it.
Yeah.
It's pretty sick.
But the craziest thing is how fast it is, because this is like, I mean, I hate to dig on it, but it's like a DJI is sort of like a Tesla, whereas a freestyle drone is more like a Formula One car. It's like much harder to fly, but just unbounded. Cause I had it sitting, like I had it recording so that I could rewatch stuff, and I just had it sitting on the ground and I just full throttle for about 3 seconds. And then I watched the video so I could like see, okay, how much time and how high did it get? Like, what's this acceleration just straight up? And it probably, I mean, I don't know the exact height, you can't really say, but it was like somewhere around 500 or 600 feet high in less than 3 seconds.
Yeah.
I mean, if you were watching it without the goggles, you wouldn't be able to see it in about 1 second. It would be,
I mean, 100%, if they reshoot Red Dawn again, dude, drones play a huge part. I mean, you're actually seeing that, like you're seeing that in Ukraine.
Yeah.
And you're seeing like small groups basically program these things to do work.
Yeah.
Super interesting. Yeah, it makes sense. The exhilaration thing makes sense, because I mean, if it works with a roller coaster ride in VR, how would it not work the same way, if not more, if you're actually having like a tactile control of a machine?
Yeah,
that's giving you the same footage
every time, dude. I'm like shaking. I can like feel my elbows, heart just freaking exploding.
That is super cool.
Because I mean, you're going, like you can go up really high and just pitch it straight down, just literally cut the props and it just falls.
Yeah.
And so you can fall from 1,000 feet. You're literally just skydiving and looking through the goggles and you're just watching it, and you can stop it within like, you know, 50 feet from the ground easily. And so
what's the range? Like, I mean, what's like, give us some like details on that.
So
like,
the video,
what's battery life? What's range?
The video feed is what is going to limit the range, not the control. But if you lose video, the drone is gone.
You don't know where it is.
Because you cannot fly it without seeing. The video transmitter is rated, claimed maximum 13 kilometers.
Whoa.
In reality, you're going to want to be within like a mile for safely flying it. But if you wanted to set it up, quote unquote, long range, they'll do antennas certain ways and stuff. And you can easily fly like multiple miles away. But right out of the box, like the way it's set up right now, like I could do a mile.
That's still impressive.
Yeah.
So that's a mile from you. So you have, you have a 2 mile spread.
Easily. Yeah. Right? It could probably be more. It's all about like, what's your confidence level and like, how concerned are you about actually losing that drone? Because if you want to like push that envelope, you can get a few miles away. But ultimately, the one of the limiting factors is battery life, because with this, it's such a high power, very
Right.
high power motors. It's only like an 8 minute flight time.
Okay.
Whereas like a DJI, they can get up to like 30 minutes because
Yeah.
they're lighter, more efficient, more
Right.
fragile, but they're like more
Right.
rangy.
Yeah. Less
So
horsepower, more consistency. Yeah.
So that's about where it says about 8 minutes. But if you're doing 80 miles an hour,
Right.
8 minutes is that's a long way. So like you can get out there, you can go way high, you can go really far, like as far as you would want. Because I remember I thought, well, I'm gonna get antennas made and go really far. Then you go fly it and you get like even a quarter mile away, and you're like, man, that's a long ways away. I mean, it starts to get kind of nerve-wracking because you're like, if
Right.
this goes down, I
You're
mean,
done.
it's gone. You know, it's like.
It provides, man, it provides some like interesting questions because the utility of them is so interesting. It's like, okay, automatically, wow, drones would be amazing for scouting when you're hunting.
Well,
Automatically, completely illegal.
completely,
And like at the end of the day, not really fair chase.
yeah,
Right?
it's a little bit too far, yeah.
But like it's that makes there's a lot of people who would probably I mean people poach. So you all of a sudden you have this technology where you can like use this thing or like scouting trails or it's just I mean some of it like with the DJI stuff where it can like follow you and you're like okay I'm hitting this downhill I'm gonna have the drone follow me like the technology is so interesting.
My main use case when I've developed the confidence to be willing to do this is I want to basically like summit mountains with it. So it's like you go
Oh,
for a little
cool.
hike, you know how you see those like gnarly ridges
Yeah.
and you're like, there's no way I'm never gonna get on
Yeah,
that
you're
ridge.
not going to do that.
Not possible or not
Right.
likely. And so I want to fly up there and just like go along the ridge and just get a video of basically where a human can't go. You know what I
Right.
mean? Which is super interesting to me because there's a lot of that in Idaho where it's like, I'm gonna just go see what's on top of that big mountain. You know what I mean?
And as far as what about as far as like, okay, do you have to have a license for this thing?
So those waters are totally churning right now.
Yeah.
Honestly, if you thought you were informed 6 months ago, you may not be anymore.
Okay.
It's a very, very like open thing. There's legislation getting passed and blocked like almost on a monthly basis around drones. And so, yeah, honestly, I don't really know for the FPV world, like these drones, the non-DJI, like high power, shorter range, it seems like no one just cares and no one bothers them. I think where the issue is like the longer, like a DJI that can fly high, far, all that, and
Right.
that like someone could go to Best Buy and buy one and
Right.
not really have concern for like the potential that this thing has and fly it like over a football game or something.
Right.
That's where the issue is. So it seems like if you're just minding your own business and you're not doing absolutely idiotic stuff with them, no one really
You're
cares.
also in like fairly rural Idaho. It's going to be different if you're in LA.
The biggest
Probably.
concern I have is like someone on the personal side, like a individual being upset that you're flying a drone near them or near their house and them
Totally.
chewing you out. That's probably the biggest
Yeah.
problem I could have. So I
Well, it's
have to
the
be
same. Like, if you
mindful.
look at drone, like the idea of a drone and overlanding to me makes, I mean, again, it's like really an interesting idea, but it's also a super noisy, invasive, like, you know, something recording. And like, I could see it where, like, you know, if you're out in the woods and you're flying it around, I could see someone who else is in the woods is like pretty bummed out.
Yes, yeah, for
I wouldn't
sure.
be psyched if I was out camping with my kids and a drone flew over us.
Yeah,
Right.
that's a fact. Yep.
And that
And
is like, but that's when it's really fun to have a drone is to like scout around in the woods.
I'm gonna try to hold myself to a standard of like just courtesy. You know what I mean? It's like,
Yeah.
where are you flying it? Who's around?
Who's around?
Because it
Yeah.
is, these are extremely loud. This
Right.
one's way louder than like any drone that you would normally see.
And it's a very noticeable pitch.
Yes.
Like as a human, you're like, what's going on?
Because oddly enough, I've flown it quite a bit. I've never watched it fly because I can't.
Because you can't.
Yeah. but I can hear it because it's, I like fly, I can just with my ears,
dude, it's so
feel
weird.
The directionality. And it's like, if I fly it over and do like a hard bank or a, you know, rapid climb, it screams, dude. The thing is like a freaking leaf
blower.
So
here's the deal. I'm like fairly confident Elon at least listens to like some of our episodes. So what I would like to know, if we could get a response, is like, how does this tie in with Neuralink?
Definitely could.
have you been following along? This is now I'm tangent a little bit, but have you been following
yes.
along with Neuralink?
I absolutely have. Yeah.
Explain to me how that's not just a given that it'll be tied to drones.
It will.
100%.
Yeah. Because even DJI, they did a remote where instead of like joysticks,
yep,
it's like almost like a Wii remote, like a video
yeah.
game, where
yep.
I watched a video where a guy was using it where you literally just point. It's like follow where I'm pointing.
Yeah.
So if you just took that apparatus and put it, I mean, it's easy, I'm sure.
So you get control at the speed of your mind, not tethered to your ability to actually
move your fingers. Yeah.
Move your fingers.
Yeah. It'd be crazy.
Entering weird days.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're speculating that the best video gamers in the world are going to be like quadriplegics in the next 5 years.
Yeah. That's it. And it's, so the first real case study is essentially that,
mm-hmm.
right? And he's playing games and he was a gamer. And you think about it, if you play games, like games are an escape. Yeah. I probably for most of us, like if you're a gamer, like I am not a gamer, but that is what games provide. Right.
Mm-hmm.
If that is one of your primary outlets, that's pretty strong medicine.
Yeah.
You're going to get real good. Would you get Neuralink?
That's a good question. It's going to have to mature a whole lot.
Yeah.
But I probably would in the right
setting.
I'm
weird, man. I'm not super medically fearful.
Yeah.
And I'm like technologically not super fearful. I would probably go for it.
Yeah.
You could provide like a strong use case, like for myself. I also think that the problem with having ADHD in Neuralink could be real. I mean, Instagram and Google and Wikipedia are already an issue.
Yeah.
And there's a barrier to entry.
Yeah. Adds a connectivity that's interesting. Like
be freaky.
How will the addiction factor pan out?
Yeah. And like, people are like already positive addiction where you're like, okay, all I want is more information.
Yeah.
That could be a problem. You're like drinking from the fire hose.
Yeah. That's going to be a thing we'll have to navigate. That's for sure.
It'll be able to be used in design.
Oh yeah.
Which is crazy.
I saw they posted that the Neuralink user, the second guy, was using Fusion 360.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What?
Mm-hmm.
See, it's gonna be crazy.
Yeah.
Oh man.
So FPV drone pilots with Neuralink. It's like RoboCop kind of.
I mean,
craziness.
Legitimately, they're depending on how you take that narrative. Like that's absolutely terrifying.
Well, and I was thinking about it. I mean, this helicopter that I have, quadcopter, it. I was thinking about it. I was like, I'm pretty sure it's technically more agile than pretty much any bird other than maybe like a hummingbird or something. You know what I mean? But compared to like a normal pigeon or something, like it could easily. And it's like, but I remember thinking the limit is I can't think the way a pigeon can think.
Right.
You know what I mean? I won't be able to control
but you
it.
Will literally develop a skill set that is non-human in its like mechanics.
Well, the question is with Neuralink, imagine, it's like humans can fly better than a bird at that point. You know what I mean? Cause you would have that seamlessness that a bird has. Like that's crazy.
Well, and then it starts to like bridge this weird gap, right? Which is if you are able to control it with your mind, and it is providing an element of reality, Does the body process that as flight?
Yeah.
Like you're not getting wind speed, but at the point where you are reaching out, like it's weird. My brain just, we've got Pilot Butte next to the house. And I was like, oh, if I had a drone, I just like flew it there. It's like, okay, I got to miss the tree on the way, but then I'm straight shot. And it's like how rapid that was in my mind. You look and you're like, if that was actually flying something, it's not theoretically different.
Yeah. Well, it's just like the dreams you have where you're flying.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an approximation of that in real life. I mean, I've noticed myself, like they say beginners do this a lot, where it's almost like I like step back or
You're,
almost fall because you're trying to stop and your body
yeah,
is trying to compensate for the G-force that you're not actually
totally.
experiencing.
Oh
And so
man.
you're all, you know, it's kind of like when you hit your brakes on a car, you don't realize it, but your whole body pushes back to counter it. It's like that. You go to stop and you're like, whoa, I almost fell over backwards. 'Cause
Yeah, that's why a
yeah.
passenger will spill their drink on a shortstop and you won't, right? Your body's
Exactly.
understanding.
So it's weird. It's a weird feeling. It's
So
really cool.
where do you take it? Like, what is next? So most interesting things that I've seen are like, okay, FPV racing. I just think it's super interesting. Like that, the response that you're getting is pretty rad, seeing as you're not putting yourself in physical danger. You get the same thing on a sport bike and a track. Not the same thing. Don't hate me for saying that. Like, but your body right now is processing some of that information,
Yeah. Similar
right?
adrenaline and
Similar adrenaline.
whatnot.
Now
And
that
I thought
might
about
change.
it's probably the most acceleration you can ever perceive, basically in any
What do
scenario.
you, what, okay, so like how would it be calculated? Like what is 0 to 60 or what are the
I mean, the
G's?
0 to 60 has got to be a fraction of a second. I mean, well under a second.
Wow.
I mean, maybe a quarter second or something. I don't know what it is. But if you watch a video of like a takeoff of one of
Yeah,
these,
they're gone.
if they start at like a 30-degree angle so that they're not fighting gravity, they're just going forward. Yeah, I mean, it's 100 yards away in literally a blink of an eye. And so, I mean, I don't know of any. I mean, human can't survive that G-force. So it's like the fact that you're in it with a camera is
Yeah.
allowing you to experience G's that that a human couldn't survive. There's no way.
That's wild. So, okay. Do you like with this type of drone, right, where it's like this very high performance, very agile, very fast, like are you gonna like race or like what disciplines
The
exist?
racing doesn't really excite me at all. For me, it's mainly really crazy, ridiculous, like sightseeing. It's
Okay.
just seeing things that no human's ever seen before from that
Right.
angle is pretty easy with a drone because it's like you can't fly a helicopter in these places.
Exploring.
You would never have flown a plane through this canyon, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
It's like if you fly this thing in a certain way, it's like I'm the first human on Earth to see the top of this shelf on this cliff. You know what I
From
mean?
this or under this shelf
Yeah,
or.
exactly. And it's just seeing, just changing the perspective of the outdoors. And it's mainly outdoors, but I just have to
Okay.
get a lot of practice in because if you're going to be doing that, the risk, is exponential of losing the
Right.
thing when you're over timber and
Do
rocks.
you ultimately go to a different type of drone that is more suited towards like it's like
So
less about high speed, more about long
the
range?
two platforms I want are this one. Because it has the most dexterity of really any type of flying thing. It's like the most controllable
Sure.
aircraft there is. Then the other platform I would like to set up is a fixed wing airplane that is not a
Oh.
helicopter because they're radically more efficient. They can go way
Right.
further, but with way less like degrees of control. And so it's like if you were looking at a mountain and you're like, I want to fly over the top of that mountain, but it's 5 miles away, a fixed wing will do it. You know what I mean? In FPV. And so,
Wow.
and there's people that can set up with the right stuff. They're flying like 20 kilometers, whichever, 12 miles, like
That
one
is
way.
crazy.
So I would like to set up a fixed wing when I need the range, and then the quadcopter when I want, just interesting control ability. Because the airplane, you just have to have way more clearance. You have to have elevation because
Right.
They can't just like, oh, I'm about to crash, just go up. You know what I mean?
Right.
They like windage and
Right.
weird, you know, thermals and stuff. They have more worry or about
Endless.
crashing.
I love it,
But
dude.
yeah, so
Congrats.
well, thank you. If you can't tell, I'm excited about it, dude. My wife's kind of annoyed, but she's also into it. But like, I've been really into it. It's good.
Did I see? Is there a security system that uses drones? Like almost like a Ring cam-esque, or my brain just like making that up on me?
A lot of drones out there. Wouldn't surprise me.
I mean, because that seems like that's like another very good application where, like, dude, if you're a rancher, how do you not have drones?
Yes.
Right?
Well,
That just seems obvious.
I saw a video, I think it was a DJI product, where it was a box that was waterproof that you
Yep.
get actual power to, or maybe it had a solar panel. You put it out somewhere, just stands alone, and remotely, maybe it's through like cell service or whatever, you can make it open and there's a drone in it.
Yeah.
Drone takes off, flies around, you can control it. And then it auto lands inside that box, which begins it to wireless charge. The box closes by itself. So it's like if you have, let's say you had like property that's really remote, you could put that there and you could inspect your property at any time. And they don't have to recharge the drone. You don't have to go to the field to get it. It just like lives there.
It's flying a pre-programmed pattern.
Or I think you can
Or you can
control it.
control it
Yeah.
probably.
It could
But if
send
you
you.
had a big piece of property and it's filming and you want an oversight, you know the areas you want to look
Yeah.
at, you can
You
program
just
it.
have a
Thing goes
just
bzzz.
survey the
Yep.
property once a week and send me
Yep.
the video and an email or whatever. It's crazy.
Oh. All right. If you're listening to this, leave us a comment and let us know like how you're using your drone. I'm curious. Like, I think a lot of it right now is still like a lot of people, it's just the tech is cool and it's like a toy. Like, but obviously there's a lot of use cases. And I'm sure that people are like, my thought when I first got in our little one, which could fly like a pre-program, was like, oh, it'll be great. Like, I can fly it around the shop and take videos. Never did it. Didn't really work that well. We tried it, you know, but the concept was there. Pretty cool. All right.
Well, guess we'll end on that beautiful
Yeah.
tangent. Well, it's not even tangent. That's not even, it was never tangent. It was just a complete detour, but
Dude, I think it's sick. I mean, it's again, I think that that type of interest is 100% necessary for the type of work that we do. Like, it's parallel, it's tech, it makes perfect sense for you. You're programming, you're like assembling, you're doing all this stuff, like, and you're getting out of the shop, which is really good.
yeah.
And your kids are going to be sick
And
pilots.
the kids really like watching it because I can just dot like USB feed it to my phone so they can
And
real
they can
time,
watch.
they can watch real time what I'm seeing.
So here's a question. Can you plug in a second headset?
I assume so, but I haven't looked into that.
So
I don't
like
see why not.
that for your kids, where like even if you at some point, if you're like, oh, you want to see this? Just letting them see that immersed
Would be
over a
crazy.
period of time may increase their ability with it because it's like exposure. It could also like jumble their brains. I don't
Well,
know.
one thing you could possibly do is you can buy goggles that you put your phone in, and then I could just put the phone with the live feed in the
Totally.
kids' little VR
Yeah.
goggles for, you
Yeah.
know, an Amazon to
I mean, they say
$20 or
like, I
whatever.
know with like normal VR, they say like kids are supposed to be like 13 and they or something like that. There's definitely like
Because like eye development or
maybe
something,
like
or
some developmental issues. So like that could be a problem. I've been wondering like with drones, like is there like if Wilson ever wanted to fly it, you know, or Delta wanted to fly it, like do you have like a learner's version where you have control? They can control it, but you can come in and like
yeah. So
safety it.
the receivers, you can link them together, or the transmitter, I mean, the controller. It's very common that people will like piggyback them so they're wired together.
Oh
And then
man.
the like instructor has a switch that just overrides the other controller. You know what I mean? So that's pretty common. That's pretty normal. But honestly, to fly that thing, it's pretty far out of reach for like a
Oh,
little kid.
100%,
But
100%. But even just like at 15 or 12 years old or
yeah,
whatever it is,
for
like
sure.
when you start, can you have, yeah. I'm just interested in the tech. I need to
Yeah.
stop talking about it or I'm going to end up buying one.
Yeah.
This is not a hobby that I need right
Dude,
now.
everyone I've shown it to is like, oh, I need one of those.
I
It's
will say it's stickier. I've had a number of friends try to get me into RC cars. This is more sticky than that for me. So
same.
I need to be careful. All right, let's call it. Hey, thank you guys for listening. I know we've been on a couple week hiatus, so we're working through it. Appreciate
Appreciate you
you.
guys. Have
Take
a
it
good one.
easy.